for coming to speak with us. The editor of the Columbia School of Journalism, and I really look forward very much to hearing your presentation, and particularly hearing the conversation. This should address the issues that we're all struggling with directly, which is the extent to which as we know it and the protection of journalism are compatible.
So I guess thanks a lot, Rami Clapper, and thanks to all of you for having me. I think I can tell you a little bit about myself, show you know my background, and then get into some of the questions that Rami Clapper had asked me over email. And I figure I'll talk for maybe 10 minutes and then open up the questions. So it's a little bit about me. Right now I'm a reporter with the Concord Monitor in New Hampshire. We are a community paper with a circulation of about 20,000. We cover a lot of Hoosier and Concord. We cover state government, city of Concord, about 20 surrounding towns. That number varies depending on what our budget looks like. But we come into the national spotlight every 4 years with the New Hampshire primary. We won our first Pulitzer in 2008 for feature photography, which is very exciting, though I had nothing to do with it. So that's basically paper. Right now, I cover City Hall. I am in the process of transitioning, and next month I'm going to take over the State House, being out in the city of state government. During the primary, I was covering Joe Biden and then Barack Obama, who knew that those would end up being the right candidates to cover. And before that, I covered a series about seven towns outside of Concord. Before the Monitor, I got my degree in journalism from Columbia. Before that, I spent a year working at the Jewish Advocate here in Boston. So I do have a fair amount of experience and connections in the Jewish journalism world. I'm also happy to talk about that as well. So I guess the main question Rabbi Clapper asked me is, how does my knowledge of Lashon Hara and the laws of Lashon Hara affect my journalism? I guess I still have a background. I consider myself a halakhically committed modern Orthodox Jew, so interpret that as you will. So does Lashon Hara affect my journalism? The short answer is no. To be completely honest, on a daily basis, there are a lot of other issues that confront me as an Orthodox Jew in journalism that seem more pressing than Lashon Hara. You know, everything from do I go into a church and under what circumstances to what do you do about interviewing a source in a trade restaurant, what if it's Pesach. All those things are just practical issues. But I guess the longer answer, which is probably what you want, is I still remember I went to a workshop on Jewish journalism when I was in high school. And the one takeaway lesson that I remember 10 years later, and I believe this came from Gary Rosenblatt, although I'm not sure, is how does what you're writing benefit the community? The issue of making sure that everything you write has some sort of community value. And I was looking back at some of the sources that we learned with Mark Sherwood the other night. At the Coffee Time, I thought really recalled some of that with his question of, if you're going to tell me a story about somebody, what are the implications for my future? Does this information have practical value? And that's something that, even if in my mind I don't think of it as Lashon Hara, that's a question that's on my mind all the time in journalism. I came up with three examples. There are many. But three examples of stories I've written where I felt like it really came down to weighing this, what are the competing values, what's the value to the community versus, you know, the value to somebody's privacy, to not, you know, not gossiping about somebody in print. And I think one of these cases, we were clearly in the right. One of these cases, I think we were also right, it was much more of a gray area. And the third case, I think we were wrong. The first case is two stories that I've done, one each the last couple of years, relating to overtime. Last year, in the middle of the city budget process, I got a list of all the firefighters and police officers and the amount of overtime pay that each one of them got. We published a graphic with, I guess, the top 10 earners from each department, their name, how much overtime they made, how many hours extra they worked. And we did a story basically explaining what's behind this. You know, it wasn't negative, it wasn't trying to say, ooh, look how much overtime this person got. It's trying to say there are delicate balances between do you pay a new staff member more and pay them wages and benefits versus using your current staff members and paying overtime. It explored a lot of those issues. I did a similar story this year, getting a list of all the salaries of every city employee. And again, we published the top 10 salaries with names, and it was actually connected to a similar overtime story. In that case, you know, you can very much argue that this is private information, you're announcing to the public how much somebody makes, but we felt, and we got no feedback, so I assume people concurred, that it's public money paying these salaries, taxpayers are paying these salaries are at issue when the city council is deciding the budget, which comes from tax money. So there's a very clear public interest in knowing and monitoring how your money is spent, particularly at a time when the budget and therefore your tax rate is up for debate. Second story, which was more of a gray area, and again, something that I did last year, and I'm trying to work on this year, I just didn't have the time, is tax liens. Who hasn't paid their taxes? We requested a list from the city, this is all public information, on who in the city of Concord did not pay their taxes. And our goal in that story was we looked through this, we analyzed the data, figured out who, you know, the highest non-paying taxpayers were. And the goal, we decided we weren't going to say, okay, Rabbi Klapper is a private individual, he didn't pay his taxes, we're going to call him out in the paper. People have valued privacy, people are struggling, there's no value to doing that. What we felt there was value to do is, and we took what has become the legal standard, basically, of a public figure, and said, if you're a business who wants the community to support you, if you're a developer who has built a large development and now can't pay your taxes, if you're someone where the amount that you owe is really going to make a difference, the city wants to make that money out elsewhere, wants to get that money from other taxpayers, we felt like there was public interest. So we made this sort of, it's a difficult call from who fit in where, but what we essentially tried to do is we wrote about sort of tax disputes, the total amount of tax dollars, and we did mention by name anybody who is a public figure where we felt there would be some compelling public interest. We didn't call out private individuals. And we got a couple of people upset about that, but not too many. And the third case where I think we did make a mistake was the second day after a woman was murdered by her boyfriend. The second day is always very difficult to get information. You know, the police stuff is often dried up. And one piece of solid information we found was that this murder victim had been in rehab. We got divorce papers that found at the time for divorce, she was in some sort of drug and alcohol rehabilitation center. We suspected but couldn't prove at that time that was where she met her boyfriend who later murdered her. And basically after a lot of consultation with managers under pressure of needing to get something in the paper, we did print this fact and it went into the headline of murder victim was in rehab, which no one particularly wanted that to be a screaming headline, but it was. And we got a lot of flack, I think rightly so, because the family and friends were obviously upset and made it more difficult for us because we couldn't really talk to them as much after that, although someone did talk to us eventually. But I think in that case, we did cross the line. We didn't have this confirming link that said this rehab was connected to the murderer and that was how they met. That, I think, would have made it more newsy. Instead, it seemed like we were gossiping about this private woman who happened to be a murder victim. And we published a lot of angry letters, and I think that was one case where we did cross the line and we made a mistake. Which sort of leads to the second question of, is there a need for Jewish literature to address ethical issues? I think, for one thing, yes. Somewhat for secular journalists who are confronted with some of these issues on a daily basis, more so for journalists in the Jewish press, where I think that there's often a real need for knowledge of ethical issues on Lashon Hara, ethical issues on conflict of interest, on full disclosure, on things like, you know, it's really not proper in a sense that someone's lying to the public if you are going to have a conflict of interest and not disclose it. If you have someone from Federation writing about a Federation event and not disclosing that they're from that Federation, you know, I think that's a problem that you often see in the Jewish press, institutional value. I guess just quickly, the final question that my platform asked me is, am I worried about investigations starting rumors? And from my work, what I've tried to do is ensure that my work will more debunk the rumors often than begin them. If somebody comes to me and says there's been financial mismanagement in this town, if, you know, three people call the paper and say, oh my God, the mayor is about to close the library in this next budget cycle, it's a matter of tracking down the financial records, tracking down the auditor's report, or going to the mayor to the search these rumors and saying, you know, what's the truth, what's really going on here? I think it's always important, you know, I will very rarely print an allegation by a spouse against an ex-wife or ex-husband unless that's something that in court papers are very able to be substantiated. You know, you always need to make sure that what you're printing is consider the agenda of people and figure out that what you're printing is not about to start rumors that may or may not be true. Just to give one more recent example, I was writing about a developer who was clashing with city and state officials. They had searched his property looking for environmental violations, and he told me, "We're searching looking for a crystal meth lab in my barn," and of course they didn't find it. I had no way of knowing that that was actually what they were doing. There was no evidence in any documents that there was anything but environmental violations. Our competition published the meth lab allegation. We didn't. And that was a decision I felt very comfortable with because this guy had numerous reasons for raising sort of some ridiculous possibility. Maybe he was trying to take away attention from the environmental issues. Maybe he was trying to make state officials look ridiculous, whatever it was. There was no evidence, so we decided not to print it. Overall, my experience has just been there's a lot of gray areas, a lot of considerations, and things like privacy, public interest, which I guess is all part of the rubric of Sleshnar in a sense. And it's really always been a matter for us. You know, I will talk to my editor and go on a case-by-case basis to try to evaluate, you know, what is the greatest interest in this case and what is the interest of the community. So I guess with that, I'm happy to take questions, talk about anything. But great, thank you, Ben.
Yeah. This is less connected to specific issues of like publicizing, but I'm curious. One thing you've kind of been talking about is anonymous sources, confidential sources, and journalistic ethics in that sense. I was just curious, like, when and if you use confidential anonymous sources, how that works, whether there's like a higher bar for authentication of what they say, when you would choose to use an anonymous source over a source to get their name, those kinds of...
I would never use an anonymous source over someone who gets their name. Our first priority is always to get people on the record. I've actually faced the biggest challenge in this and dealing with the homeless or people who are mentally ill, where people often have a specific reason for not wanting to get their name, and I have, in some of those cases, used, for example, first name only. But overall, I guess, and if I think more on a political level, I will often use sources on background, which basically means I'll have people tell me something off the record or on background, which I can't attribute to them, and I won't print that unless I can verify it elsewhere. So, you know, for example, often during the political campaign, I would have Hillary Clinton's people on the phone with me saying, you know, look at Barack Obama's record on this, and all that, and it was always a matter of, okay, provide me with some sort of documentation, let me check this documentation independently, and then we can run it. You know, I'm certainly not going to print Charles rumors that Clinton campaign wants me to run with the Obama campaign. I think that off-the-record sources are incredibly useful sometimes, just because they'll tell you things on background that are going to be coming up that you can prepare for. You know, someone tells you, oh, this data is going to be coming out, and here's what it's going to say, but it's not out yet, so I can't be quoted. Okay, great, let's form a story around this data, that way when it comes out, we'll be ready. In terms of actually quoting anonymous sources, our paper is a very high bar. You're almost never actually allowed to quote an anonymous source unless there's, you know, a really good reason to do so. I know when our state house reporter has I'm not sure exactly what she's done. I think occasionally she's had an anonymous source where she'll explain this person is the anonymous for X reasons, and you know, you always have to include that in the story. But on the whole, we've basically said, you know, if you're not going to tell something with your name on the record, we're not printing it. We'll use it to inform our own knowledge, and it's very helpful that way, but we won't give them the paper.
Is that because you don't trust it, or because you think that
I think it's both. I think if there's an allegation that this person is putting out, well then first of all, the person who is being accused has no way of responding. And second of all, it's more for your readers don't know what this person's agenda is. So, you know, it could be a political official who is from the other party, and if your reader doesn't know that, then it just seems like, oh, maybe it's some liability, when in reality, maybe this person is just trying to go after a candidate they don't like or a party they don't like. And some of it is just truthfulness. If you're not willing to stick your name on it, how do we know that what you're saying is accurate? But a big part is just knowing who they are, what their agenda is, and being able to respond to that.
Do you ever use an anonymous source? Do you ever try to include some information that at least can help color their perspective? So, like, you know, if this person is from the opposing party, would you make sure that this person is from the opposing party?
Yeah, I mean, if there is ever a case where I was able to use their information and had a real good reason to use it, then I would definitely qualify it with as much information as possible of exactly who they, if not their name, then a government official in the state house from the ex-party, or an advocate who has long been supportive of mentally ill, you know, whatever you're really able to use. And I mean, there have been times where I haven't used last names, again, mostly for people in social service type situations, and again, even in that case, I've right, who declined to give his last name, you know, often because of that. So.
How do you think overall the ethics in your company and in your career are all about the community? And overall, like, in most of your company, compared to the public around?
I'll be honest, I haven't studied the laws of Washington as in-depth as you guys have. Last time I really did all this stuff was probably not studying Israel a number of years ago. I mean, I think in general, some of the values are similar. Just the idea of you don't want to print vital gossip, obviously, and when you are talking about people, you want to be sure that what you're saying has some value. On the other hand, I think, you know, if I'm doing, for example, right now, I'm doing a human interest feature story on a homeless woman who, you know, formerly was this big dog trainer. She, you know, got a war, long story short, she ended up, was a very successful, ended up homeless. And a story like that, you know, does it have a huge benefit? It's arguable. It's a fascinating human interest feature story. People are interested in the topic. It's a timely topic. You know, the economy, it affects the economy, you know, that kind of thing. She is more than willing to be talked about. But is that still Lashon Hara because I am talking about another human being and publishing it? I'm not sure. It might be. But, you know, that's not something, you know. I guess that's not a consideration that we often have because, you know, part of the newspaper business, I think, is you're going to be writing about other people. And we try to put things in the paper that'll be interesting and, you know, not harmful and, you know, have value to the community. I'm not sure exactly how the two overlap or whether all the considerations of Lashon Hara would have some place in a sexual news organization. You guys may be able to answer that more than I could.
I guess when you talk to people from other communities, maybe Orthodox communities, is it fairly obvious to people that, oh, journalism is something okay? There's no talent, you know, or do people have a shot where it's like, oh, how could you do that?
I've actually never gotten that reaction. Yeah, I mean, it also may be the community that I hang out with. I've gotten a reaction of, what are you doing in Concord, New Hampshire? Are there any Jews there? And the answer is not a whole lot. But I've mostly gotten, oh, you're a journalist. That's interesting. You know, as a profession, I think a lot of Orthodox Jews don't see themselves going into. I wish more did. Just because I think that, particularly in the Jewish journalism world, you need more talented journalists, and you need journalists who also understand all segments of the community.
Okay.
So I think, particularly again, in the Jewish journalism world more than the secular, I think if you had more Orthodox Jews there, I think there would be a better understanding of the Orthodox community and that kind of media. And in general media as well. But I mean, I also in general, I think you're going to have more sex issues. You are cognizant of a lot of these ethical issues. You know, I do think that those people will bring those ethics into journalism as well, but I also think there are plenty of people in the secular world who are religious and other communities that have a similar sense of ethics. But I'm sorry, I was in the whole answer. I mean, I think that people in today's society just see the benefits of journalism. I mean, you know, whether it's our parents' generation who grew up with Watergate or, you know, any of the modern scandals. I know you guys are sending him an Applebaum. If he comes tomorrow, you know, he came pretty darn close to winning the Pulitzer for his investigative journalism that basically brought down a company. I think people really see the benefit of that. And I realize that probably doesn't sound great from a halacha perspective of day. You know, halacha isn't my number one priority, but so be it. I think it's mostly because I do work for a secular paper, and I work for a secular paper that has a strong sense of ethics. So there's nothing I've done at my paper that I feel violates my own sense of ethics, which, you know, is obviously going to be somewhat informed by Washington, by what I've grown up with. But I do think that you can have some different standards for Jewish and secular journalism, just because, you know, as I said, I'm not going to impose my Jewish values, whatever those are, on a secular paper. You know, it doesn't always matter what it comes down to. Things like if I have certain religious values on a social issue, you know, whether it's gay marriage or, you know, any of those big social issues, you know, I wouldn't put my opinion out there as the papers. But I do think for Jewish journalism, there is certainly room for saying, okay, we're a Jewish institution, we're controlled by Jews, how are these halachic considerations going to inform what we do?
Do you ever think that you ever envision yourself in a situation where you're not really comfortable, even though it seems like the, I think, at your meeting, or the stuff that more so I have to understand, like, a lot, but you would do yourself in a position that you would advocate as a politics, or do you think that it would fit for the ethics of the system and fit for any
recovery? In 4 years, there hasn't been a situation where I have asked about this. If that means I never would, I don't know. It's not something that's foremost on my mind. Just maybe imply that I'm not as philosophically committed as I like to say. I don't know. You're welcome to judge one way or the other. But basically, as I said, I sort of have this sense of ethics of how does this benefit the community, what's the value. That's what I see as sort of being an overarching Jewish value. And at least at this point, I'm not good enough to do anything that will violate that. If I did, I think my first step would not be to go to a rabbi, it would be to go to my editor and to say, this is why this bothers me, this is why I think this is an ethical problem. Let's work on this. Is there a way we could change the story? You know, is this a story that needs to run? And I mean, if I've ever done anything like that, my editors have always been very open to that conversation. So.
If you had some hypothetical case, you had, would you put the story differently about some of your medical funds, or doing something illegal, breaking the story about a Jewish public official than a non-Jewish public official?
No. I don't see why that would even be a consideration, to be honest. Maybe if you're in the Jewish, I mean, I know if you're in the Jewish sect, there's certainly the issue of do you want to air or do you want to in public, but I feel if somebody's embezzling funds, would I not report on the, you know, guy at Harvard Hillel embezzling $780,000? Clearly, that's a news story, that's a legitimate news story, and that raises a lot of important questions about, you know, whether it's financial oversight or, you know, what have you, and I think it's
I understand on a large scale revealing the Watergate type scandal benefits the community because then we're able to learn from it. We pick our advisors more carefully and try to elect people who are going to represent the issues we do. I can understand that. What I'm having difficulty with understanding is on a much smaller scale, to find out that somebody got murdered in a home by a boyfriend, maybe in my town, maybe not in my town. I guess at what point do all the little individual stories have to apply to me as a consumer of the paper that it would justify benefiting, that it's to my benefit to read the paper?
I think it's a really good question, and that's certainly a question that every reader has to answer for themselves. But I mean, I think that overall, I mean, there's a benefit to just being informed of what's going on in your community. Certainly when it comes to what the public is doing, you know, public officials are doing, the government's doing, it's your money paying for that government. In terms of things like crimes, like murders, I mean, often there is a public interest just for safety reasons of knowing what's occurred. You know, if there are rumors flying around of, you know, oh my God, this woman was murdered, you know, you sort of want to tell people she was murdered by her boyfriend, she was now in prison, and there's no danger to the public. So I think that part of it is debunking rumors, part of it is basically just telling people the important news that's going on in their community. You know, certainly, as I said, things go to elected officials, it's their money, it's their vote. Things that education people are assessing and because it's their children. And obviously it's up to every consumer to pick and choose. You know, you can don't have to read every article in the paper if you think of something that's not relevant to you. And the article is to put out stories that are relevant to as many people as possible. And obviously, you know, there will be many consumers who choose to only read one section of it, will only read the sports section, or will only read the local and state, and will only read the nation and world section. And it's It's Concord and surrounding areas. We used to cover 40 towns around Concord. Now it's closer to 20, but it's Concord and surrounding areas.
Because you cover state numbers, do you have readers, say, up in Southern North?
Yeah, we don't distribute that far north, but we have our website, concordmonitor.com, and I think we do have some readers from outside our coverage area.
What I'm wondering is that, in terms of relevance, if you have things that are only tied to a particular area when you have a very wide readership, the more local you get to the less relevant it is to the rest of your readers.
Right.
How do you deal with that?
That's actually a great question. And it's something that I think we try to take the model that I believe the Globe actually also does to an extent of with our smaller towns, we mostly try to broaden the stories. And you know, sometimes if there is something really fascinating going on in town, or if it's town meeting season, we'll cover sort of the very local politics of that town. But fairly often, if something is outside Concord, we'll try to broaden the story to the extent that it's interesting to people all over. Whether it's, you know, for example, I did a story, there was a new director of this Main Street program, a downtown revitalization program, and in order to get the story to have real interest, instead of just writing about this in one little town, which has this director turnover, I decided to write about why these downtown revitalization programs across the state are struggling, why there's so much turnover, and how these programs will be affected when I think there were some state cuts going on at that time.
I would say your Concord newspaper, there's some sort of scandal that happens in the city council nationally, then is that relevant to covering Concord to know what's going on in Nashville?
So if it's outside of coverage area, if it's Nashville, we won't cover it, and we will, sometimes we'll take an AP story or something like that, or a story from the local paper. So, no. Because it's in our circulation area, then, you know, we'll say, okay, we have readers in this town, and actually, to be completely honest, this is totally budgetary, but we've recently started bringing that in and saying, okay, we have, instead of 40 towns, even though we have some readers there, we're actually going to focus most of our coverage on the 20 towns with the most readership. So that way what we write is still going to be relevant to people. That wasn't an actual decision, it was a budget decision. But.
So you talked about, obviously, what you know about the center, I think, like, for you, and it's not in, an explicit way. But, even in general, you I think you said, you know, papers, held like more ethical, like higher ethical standards than like other papers, but at least it's definitely something that is factored, that is taken into account, not just like from a Jewish paper, just like as we could like try to be an ethical paper. And I was kind of wondering like how that was as well, how that's affected by others around the papers that may not be necessarily following the same ethical standards. And also, the other thing that I was wondering is whether these ethical standards are something that are like explicitly discussed, meaning like that some people maybe stand on one side or the other on a particular issue, but it's sort of just like people who work for this paper, you know, I know like people who come to work for the paper like have ethical standards. You guys kind of get a sense of what kind of stories are okay and what aren't, start explicitly discussing like what's okay and what's ethical and what isn't.
Sure. Based on your first question, main direct competition is Union Leader, which is officially the statewide paper, although they're more focused in Southern New Hampshire. And we do have different standards for them. Just for example, that meth lab example I gave you, they were the ones who published the allegations. We didn't. And there have definitely been times when they printed things that we haven't, because we were waiting for more proof and more confirmation, and they were willing to print it without confirmation. So they'll influence us. We try to, I mean, personally, we just say, okay, we have higher standards, and they might disagree. Certainly, like, well, we're competing for a lot of the same information, and we will do what we can to, you know, scoop them, get whatever information we can. But I think if it does come out to an ethical issue, even if we end up printing less than they might, you know, I know that doesn't bother our editors. You know, they'll say, okay, we're having a certain level of proof, and that's fine. In terms of, I guess, our ethics disclosed, we don't have any real ethical guidebook. There's nothing that I know of that's sort of written down or anything. And it wasn't something that was really discussed in my interview. For me, and I think a lot of reporters, it's more just a sense that you get from the management as stories come up. So as I'm reporting any of these stories, I'll always talk to my editor and, you know, if there's ever a concern about, you know, again, are you violating someone's privacy? I mean, there's constantly this dialogue between the reporters and the editors, you know, certainly in sensitive stories. You know, somebody's like, we recently had something, I wasn't writing this, but a teacher was accused of sexual assault, and there were a lot of conversations between the editor-in-chief, the city editor, and the reporter on that, on basically, how are you going to deal with this? What level of proof do you need? Who are you identifying in the story? Are you not identifying? When do we print these allegations with names? All of that. And really, every story I've ever worked on that has some sense of ethical issue like that, there's no blanket policy, except obviously sort of things like we don't identify victims of sexual assault. I think there's a general ethical accepted standard. But in general, it's just more on a case-by-case basis. I think the reporters are influenced by the editor's standards, and I think I got really lucky to just land in the paper, which does take these things seriously. And I don't know about other papers. I haven't worked for a while.
Do you think that, like, the way you approach that, let's say, like, an investigative piece, is the same as, let's say, a more analytical piece? Like, some things, like you said, you really make sure to, like, verify certain facts or whatever, but when you're writing a piece that's analyzing either someone's actions or a particular policy, or it really could be anything, do you think you sort of apply the same ethical standard, or there's, like, a little bit of
every story is somewhat different. I think it's always important to always try to take into consideration who's telling you something. Because we had a case recently, it was just sort of one of these feel-good human interest pieces about how the economy is affecting individuals. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my story, it was another reporter. It was an amazing reporter, and this guy told him the story that seemed very compelling and, you know, made sense, everything came together. He published it, and this guy's relatives basically called us up and said, you know, you realize that this guy was making up half of this story. Like, it was mostly lies. Yes. And we had to print a weird correction of, you know, his relative disputed X, Y, and Z about him, and when called, he refused to comment. But, I mean, on the whole, there, I mean, I'll certainly approach different stories differently. For example, if it's an analytical story, you know, often you get one expert against the other, and it's hard to know what the truth is. On an investigative story, you know, I've done a limited amount of investigative journalism, but you certainly do have to be a lot more careful with actual fact checking and calling people back numerous times. But yeah, it does depend on the story.
Do you think if someone were to rule, a rabbi were to rule, that certain part of what's generally accepted in the newsroom for a journalist is forbidden, that would just be ignored because the journalists feel that it's important to do their work and that they have a strong sense of what's right?
Depends on the rabbi, depends on the journalist. I mean, first of all, rabbis say things all the time, and I think it all depends on how much credibility that person has, and more importantly, on how much credibility that person has with the individual journalist, which brings the question of how many journalists are halakhically committed. I know a handful. Every year at Columbia Day School, I know of 1 to 2. That's been pretty constant the last 3 or 4 or 5 years since I've been, you know, getting to being involved in this in these circles. I mean, I've certainly talked to Ari Goldman about this numerous times, sort of lamenting the fact that there are not a whole lot of Orthodox journalists. So on the whole, I don't know how much of an impact it would have, possibly in the Jewish press. But again, much of the Jewish press is also not necessarily, you know, the concerns of logically bound. It just depends on the journalist and the paper. And sorry, that's not such a great question.
Does your paper come in Liberty?
We have like a small entertainment section which will pick up celebrity stuff off the AP. In terms of what we cover, there's something about someone who's well known and local will write it, but that tended to be more political than celebrity. We just don't have a whole lot of local celebrities that we're really following, so not a whole lot, no.
If your paper offered you, Judge Statehouse piece, they offered you the executive celebrity music piece.
I have very little knowledge and not much interest in that.
Yeah. Okay, I could list you with celebrity journalism.
It depends on what the journalism is. If it's tabloid writing about, you know, rumors about who's sleeping with who, I just think that's ridiculous. It depends on the person. If it's somebody who has made an issue of, you know, I'm a celebrity and I'm going to have good moral standards and make statements on family values and having an affair, of course you should print it. If it's, you know, somebody who's really put themselves in the public life, then maybe. I think the legal standards are pretty clear in terms of you have a lot of flexibility on people who have made themselves public figures. Ethically, I'm not sure how much value there is to printing a lot of the gossip. On the other hand, that's not something I've done a whole lot of or been really compelled to do. And, you know, I think the idea of following someone around just to get a shot of them when they're in a bikini on the beach, who really cares? You know, people do it because it sells papers. I think that's the problem with consumers as much as with journalists. If it didn't sell papers, people wouldn't do it.
I want to push a question, not just hand, please, because one of the issues that we're trying to figure out is the extent to which also as a framework is all useful in this sense. So, presumably, if your paper asks you to cover a story on Shabbos in a way that forces you to violate something that you recognize as policy, you would refuse.
Right.
And you wouldn't work for any paper that did that.
Right.
So, is there a line like that? Let's suppose that the Concord Monitor got to Denver to go the way the Boston Globe. All right, if all is left, then they go to the Herald. So is it not worth staying in the profession if the part of the job requires you to do things like report celebrity divorces? Is that line a healthy line in the same way the Shabbos would be? Or is it much more a gray area?
I think it's much more of a gray area, possibly because I don't know the issues as well as I know the issues of Shabbos. I also think, you know, something like Lashon Hara, there are so many ways of defining it, so many opinions, not as clear as, you know, you can't write or ride a car on Shabbos. It's much more of what can you say under what context, under what conditions, to who. I do see that as much more of a gray area. Would I stay in the profession if all it was celebrity divorces? No, I would see no reason to, because I think there's not a whole lot of benefit to that. If that became a part of my job, I would probably try to cover it in a way that was not as sensational as some of the tabloids do and adhere more to the truth, and whether that would be possible or not, I don't know.
That was all truth. It's just the truth is, you know, what's probably not enough is talking about the hypothetically private lives of public figures. That's just what it is.
Okay.
So that is wrong.
I wouldn't say it's flat out wrong, because people do put themselves in the public eye. That does give you some sort of license to pry into their lives. You put yourself in the public eye, you said, you know, I want you to look at me, to write about me. Can you then really say, I want you to write about me, but only on this topic? I'm not so sure. I think that's a gray line, and I think it very much depends on what the issue is, how relevant it is to the work that they're doing in public, to who they are, what their position is, if they're, you know.
So let's touch on the Odeon belt, which I thought was a really interesting answer. It's kind of like the way terrorism belt gave an answer very much like yours. Mark Jerkowitz gave a radically different answer on the question of whether journalists are allowed to think about the consequences of what they're doing. So let's say one of the fun test cases, the Oliver Sipple case, that you studied. Oliver Sipple? Oliver Sipple was a man, was an ex-Marine, who saved his fourth wife when he when he deflected the aim of a woman who was trying to shoot President Ford. It became a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
But he begged the newspapers not to write about it. The San Francisco Advocate, whatever it is, Harvey Milk, I think. As being a member of the gay community in San Francisco, because they believed that this would have the significant public effect increasing public sympathy for gay rights. The consequence of this, at least as he understood it, was that his family refused to speak to him again. And he eventually committed suicide.
Wow.
Okay. So now, like, what are the kind of pure utilitarian arguments? If one thinks that gay rights is an important issue, it was probably right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, the overall consequences of the action were an improved political climate, and you can even in all numbers say an improved political climate diminishes the extraordinary high rate of suicide among gay teenagers, and so that Oliver Sipple suicide was statistically likely counterbalanced. By dropping the suicide rate generally. And that's the kind of framework that you can use to think about things, or you just say, well, you know what? There's a public interest, I can't think about the consequences of an individual. Whenever there's a public interest, that has to override. Or you say, you know what, I have no right to publish private information that's not immediately, right, that private information the individual doesn't want published if he hasn't done anything wrong.
Right. I mean, I think that it's certainly a balance, and I think there definitely has to be some consideration made to the consequences of what you're writing. And in a case like this, if you're in somebody who's an unwilling public figure, you know, I think that that's somewhat different than a willing public figure who has thrust himself into the limelight and should write about me than someone who is in a situation where they just sort of got thrust into the limelight unintentionally. And then I think that you probably do have more of a strong obligation to think about what's private versus what's connected to the news or the incident.
Because they don't want to be.
Right, because, right. I mean, they didn't come to the paper like some of these celebrities do and say, write about me. You know, they were in a situation that became newsworthy. I would love to try to get a profile of that type of person, and I certainly see the appeal to writing that. But I also think if there is something that is, you know, sensitive information that they really don't want published, you know, there's certainly room. I don't know for sure what I would do, but I think there's certainly room to consider those kinds of things. I mean, just to give you an example, there was somebody in New Hampshire who, a guy shot a cop, this guy then shot the guy who killed the cop, and he was exonerated. And he did not want any press. He was a total recluse, had a sketchy history, and it was a really big question of how much do you write about this guy's past, how much do you find his current life, and in the end, I think a lot of the papers didn't do a whole lot about his life until he then ended up in court 6 months later for threatening somebody else, in which case it became deserving. But yeah, and I think it's a very hard balance. I do think you have to take possible consequences and all these things into consideration.
So what sort of calculus learned? There's a movie that came out a few months ago about that feature starting to discuss like politicians. Some were involved in like policy making, some were less involved in doing all kinds how much I would say. But it was the force they had on them against their will and you know, people giving information about them, it was like a documentary on them.
Is this not gay politicians?
Not politicians who are gay, and some of them who have other Republicans that they do was so like see what your answer to this is, would it change if it's a politician? And would it change if it's a politician who has policy policy power and votes against you?
Would it change just if it's a politician? No. Again, but would it change if it's a politician making strong statements against gay rights who is gay? Yes. I think some of these are hard to, I mean, I know of a gay politician in New Hampshire who, I'm not sure how involved he was in the gay marriage campaign. We all know he's gay. He hasn't made a point of it publicly, so there hasn't really been a reason to print it. If this guy did go out there making lots of statements against gay rights while secretly he was gay, that does seem like it's more hypocritical and makes it more newsworthy because of that. But I mean, certainly if it's just a, you know, random state senator or whatever, U.S. senator that has never talked about being gay publicly, you know, has, you know, I see no reason why that's newsworthy. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you keep on sort of, when people are giving examples of possible stories, hypothetical stories, you keep the standard you keep on using is newsworthy. You refer like, what do you mean when you say that? Does that include an ethical standard? Is it just about whether people are interested in reading it or whether it's worth printing for some other reason? Like, what goes into making the decision of newsworthy or not?
So, again, I have mostly been a reporter, not the editor, so I don't really have the ultimate answer. But, I mean, from what I've seen, I think it's a mix of a lot of factors. Is there some value to the public? Is there some reason the public would be interested in this? Again, is this an ethical, something that ethically we can, should be reporting? I think that's certainly a part of it. Is this something that our readers will be interested in, will pay money to read? Is there something that's the public good? I mean, it's hard to define. I think it's a lot of...
Can you envision a story which would be both newsworthy and still shouldn't be published?
I mean, I think sometimes, for example, with the Times, when they had that reporter in Afghanistan, clearly a newsworthy story that your reporter has been kidnapped, but a very clear value to personal public safety to an individual not to publish it. And, you know, the Times obviously suspected that, and so did a lot of the other media organizations. And certainly I think there are cases, you know, where there's public safety issues. I mean, there are things that we've been told. There are things sometimes that we've been told by the police where, you know, you can't, until you can actually confirm something on record, you know the information, you can't print it. That's frequently the case.
That's just one hypothetical, and thank you. Let's suppose that a school is honoring, in Austria, a local school is honoring a teacher for 40 years of fine service. And part of the service, so you're assigned to a story on that teacher. And in that story, you discover that yes, those teachers very popular with 75% of the students, but there are 10% of the students who really don't like the teacher. There's the one kid 10 years ago really, really doesn't like the teacher. And the teacher's retired.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a choice of one hand between portraying a more accurate portrait of the teacher's career which is that it is a quite popular teacher, who nonetheless has detractors, and those detractors are quite severe. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, it's not clear what the public good is of people having an accurate portrait of a retiring teacher. Or alternatively, you can do a whitewash and just report on the, you know, or carry it as a sidebar. While not all students like Mr. So-and-so, right? Just the standard comment that I received was X, or you can say, given a choice between, since I can't run the story, I won't run the story which isn't balanced, and I don't see the point taking teacher's moment in the sun and reminding the dark moments, we're just not going to run the story, even though it is a public interest story, because we can't choose.
So, again, so I always have to say, I'm never 100% sure to answer, but I think in that case, I probably are on the side of printing the story, making very clear that, you know, 75% of the comments were positive, and people had all these great things to say about the teacher, and including the teacher over her 40 years of teaching, or his 40 years of teaching has, you know, certainly had their detractors, you know, some of these people say it. So I say I'd make that a couple of paragraphs, you know, not a feature focus of the story, but probably including it. Just because, I also think, to be honest, it undermines my credibility if people read this story and know that there's more to the story that's not getting reported. That makes me seem like purposely whiteboxing or whatever it is. And I do think that the author's value often is telling the truth, unless there's a very compelling reason to leave something out. And I'm not sure that a teacher retiring who has some detractors is a compelling reason to leave it out. I think every teacher has their detractors. And, you know, if you are able to get those detractors on the record, I mean, it doesn't seem super ethical, actually, to just completely ignore them. You know, again, I'd say maybe downplay them, have a couple paragraphs in your, you know, 30-paragraph story, whatever it is, but certainly something.
What is the teacher in his DUI 25 years ago?
Is that probably not relevant, unless at that point it blew up into a big scandal. And
it was a big scandal.
The teacher almost got resigned 25 years ago. Okay, so maybe your story is, you know, there were some tough moments with this teacher 25 years ago when she got busted for DUI, but since then she has become this incredibly popular teacher and just hasn't made a difference.
So this case, and the articulation of these four, I thought was really cool. So, plus, on that story, so why do you need to put that in? Let's suppose, you know, this teacher has been 25 years trying to get people to forget this, and finally has a generation of students who don't know about this, although of course their parents do. They have their moment in the sun. They have their moment in the sun, all of a sudden, all the students are wandering around talking, I didn't know that Mr. Johnson was a guilty guy 25 years ago, so what's the reason to print?
The reason is, if your goal is to write for a school publication about how wonderful a teacher is, you're not putting it in.
Right.
If your goal is to provide a complete portrait of this guy who, you know, for a local paper, I mean, I think that if that's an important part of their history, the same way as when you're writing an obituary, you know, you're not going to ignore something significant that happened in their past if it's part of a complete portrayal of who they are. If that's the type of story you're trying to write, you know, I think that there is value in telling the truth and of painting that complete picture and, you know, not making it, and in a sense, it's partially selfish. You don't want to make it seem like you're the type of publication that is going to whitewash things. But, I think I definitely see where you're coming from, that it could potentially be questionable what's the value, but I do think if something is there in the public in the past, you know, shouldn't be that detrimental to the teacher. It's something that's already known. And it's just part of offering a complete portrayal of who this teacher is and maybe showing what they've risen, you know, against in the past to become this incredibly popular teacher that they are.
So that's so. Two beautiful, really contradictory articulations.
Probably.
One is a really interesting, I think, really valuable claim that unless you have a community that already assumes that you're not supposed to put negative information purposelessly, so any time you leave out negative information, you lose your credibility, and therefore if necessary, always do it on, right? That creates a really interesting circularity that you can't get ethically out of your community. Right? But in the second case, I think that's a fascinating, I think I have a lot of sympathy for that position. I'm taking it, that's an advocate position, or an angel's advocate position. The second one was, but then it's, one is we need to be given an honest portrait. There's, we need to give an honest portrait, we need to be perceived as giving an honest portrait, and everyone knows what, and it's public already anyway. So those values come in tension is, you happen to know that they had a DUI, but it wasn't a big story 20 years ago. So now it's not an honest portrait, it's not a full portrait of the future, if you don't mention, right, if you don't mention that, you had DUI, they were alcoholic. It's certainly a really important part of someone's life to know that they're an alcoholic and they struggle with it, and things like that. But if it's not public, you don't have the issue about people about losing your credibility because no one else knows about it. And so the only issue really left is honest portrayal.
In that case, maybe it's not as important because if it wasn't, brought out in the public, if it wasn't a big scandal, maybe it's something that was a mistake 25 years ago.
Yeah,
it's not valuable at that point.
Your assessment is that it's really, this is part of who the person is, right? You're not writing a fair, you understand that you're writing an unbalanced portrait of this person. Right? Really, a big part of the life was the struggle. It just never surfaced.
Well, you just made the leap that it's a big part of their life. I mean, if it's a mistake that they made 25 years ago that nothing came up, maybe it's not necessarily important to include in the story. Whereas if it became a big scandal and people knew about it and it's something they had to confront as a teacher, then it's more newsworthy. I mean, I'm certainly not saying if, one isolated incident 25 years ago that wasn't important in any way,
It is important to understand the person, but it's not part of the public record.
Right, so
where I'm trying to go with this straightforward fact is I'm willing as a reporter to write a story that I know is somewhat misleading in order to avoid harming somebody unnecessarily.
Right. And I think in that case, maybe it's not 100% relevant to what I'm trying to do, which is a portrait of them as a teacher. And if it was something that was well known, maybe it was something involving one of their students, it would be more relevant. Whereas if it's a private thing that happened 25 years ago, maybe it's not, you don't publish it.
Okay.
I will certainly concede that point.
I'll try one more. This is their second job. In the first job, the teacher, which is in another town that no one knew about, they were eventually removed because people accused them.
I have to write that story. I've written the draft story.
Right? But no one knows about that in this town. Right. They went on to a highly successful career as a teacher in this town. But certainly not even a portrait who was there as a teacher, so really it was a psychological portrait, is they spent their life making up for the hours they made 25 years ago. But no one in town knows that. Right, it was a man who shot Liberty Bay Lester. Right? Those of you who haven't seen the movie, we should watch it. Yeah, it's a attention sensibility. It's not relevant to the rest of us, but it's exactly the moral belief. So by the time about where the ethical sensibility comes from in that circumstance, where you have, is it truth per se such a value, even if it's not going to be caught, you're not being told, is that such a value that as a reporter it has violated who you are to write something that you know doesn't accurately fully portray your reality as well as you could?
No, I think it depends on the situation. I mean, I actually did, as I said, it wasn't the first thing, I did a story where a new teacher was coming into this district, had left the other district, and there was some accusation of sexual harassment. They left after that, and it was unclear if that's why they left. So in that case, I did actually have to go back and talk to the principal, the board of licensing, and finally to the teacher, basically saying what happened with the sexual harassment claim. And if it was found out that they were forced out because of that, I would have fronted it. The conclusion was that no one has been able to prove any sort of wrongdoing whatsoever, and there's no indication that they left. It was unclear whether they left because of this, but there was no proof of anything, so we never published it. And I just think, if what you're saying is part of their psychological picture is that they've been spending time after saying up to that mistake. That's a great story.
Yeah.
And, you know, particularly if this person's willing to talk about it, then...
Oh, they are. They don't want to publish this, but they know about it, and they come to you, and they say, please don't publish this.
Right. Again, I'm not sure it would be a matter of, well, first of all, worthy competitors, but it would be a matter of how really relevant is this to what you're writing about now? Can you write this story by only focusing on what they've done in the last 25 years? Is it, you know, is it on, again, is it not truthful? Is there a valid story, a legitimate story on what they've done in the last 25 years? Or can you only deal with it in the last 25 years in light of this mistake 25 years ago? If it's the former, maybe it's not relevant. If it's the latter, maybe you do need to publish it.
Okay,
so just a quick question on that. Would it make a difference if you would describe what the paper was going to publish then?
Possibly, yeah. In the sense that if it was going to become public anyway, there wouldn't be as much value of us not doing it.
But that other thing you said earlier, where you didn't think that you had enough proof of something, and the other newspaper didn't either, so they published
that issue. Well, I think that those are different situations because in that case, was the case when we had the same level of proof, and we didn't feel it was strong enough proof, they did feel it was strong enough. In something like this, it's more of a judgment call of, you know, and it will become public anyway, and, you know, that's definitely a factor to consider of if we didn't publish this and it would just be private versus if we didn't publish it and it would become public anyway. I'd like to spend your considerations, but it's very situational.
All right, you want to ask one more?
I'm also trying to understand the portrait of the journalist a little bit also. Would you reflect, Sarah, on a time when you published a story that just made you love being a journalist, just something that was just really fun I get what you said, I love my job, this is what I get to do, and
I think there has been a bunch, although not, you know, necessarily the one that rises to the top. I need to see a couple of examples. There's actually one time I was working for the Jewish Advocate, and I was able to, again, it's just one of the measures features, not, you know, particularly journalistic necessarily, but I'll give you an example. In that case, I was doing a story on, it was some 15-year-old kid who had lost family members to, I think, kidney disease or something like that. And this kid had basically started this, whole drive to raise, did a marathon or some race to raise money for the disease. And, you know, I was able to write this. You know, it's a very compelling story of, you know, interviewing several family members as well as, you know, foundations connected with the disease. And write the story that basically gave this kid a ton of publicity for their cause, and partially as a result of that, you know, they were able to raise a significant amount of money for, you know, this amazing cause. And I've done similar stories with a family soldier who had PTSD in Iraq. And again, we're doing a fundraiser, you know, raising for, you know, benefit with the Wounded Warrior Foundation, and again, able to get this sensitive portrayal of the family, their son, and, you know, really just get so many interesting in the end, thousands of people came out for this free series, thousands of dollars. In both those cases, I was able to feel like, you know, not even from in-depth journalism, but just from being able to write a sympathetic portrait of these people getting out in the public, which was able to raise a ton of money for this really good thing. That wasn't hard journalism at all. I won't pretend it was, but it wasn't a matter of just doing some real good in the community. And then in other senses, another case that was more difficult, and this wasn't like a fun story to report, but it was more I felt proud of what I did, was Concord had been, the city had been considering building a new library, basically, they were conducting all negotiations in secret. They were property negotiations. No one knew what they were talking about. I found out, and was able to confirm with several landowners who were involved with these negotiations where the site was of the new library. I published, the city wouldn't comment, came out, you know, several months later, I had accepted this amazing change in city policy that as a result of my finding out and publishing, there was this outcry of, why are you doing this in secret? You know, this should not happen in secret. And they pushed off the plan to the library for a year in order to create a commission to study the issue publicly, issue a public report, hold public meetings, and take public input on where this library should go. You know, could there be unintended consequences? Like, maybe it's going to happen later than it would have? Maybe, but I felt like I just performed a really valuable public service by, you know, finding out the information that the state didn't want me to have, making it public, and bringing this into the public. And I feel honored, though. I work with the homeless, which has been really rewarding, and there's a lot of underprivileged people in society that don't always have a voice, and again, it's been very rewarding. But you have to run that your view has right.
Thank you. That was terrific. Thank you very much.